the fallout. On Olympus, news of the devastation being wrought upon the surface of the earth reached the gods and at last the ears of Zeus himself. "Look what's happening," cried a distraught Demeter. "The crops are being sunburnt or frostbitten. It's a disaster." "The people are afraid," said Athena. "Please, father, something must be done." With a sigh, Zeus reached for a thunderbolt. He looked to where the chariot of the sun was now plunging in a mad tumble towards Italy. The thunderbolt, as all Zeus's thunderbolts did, hit its mark. Phaeton was blasted clear of the chariot and fell flaming to earth, where he dropped like a spent rocket into the waters of the river Eridanos with a hiss and fizz. The great sun steeds were pacified by the absence of the panicky boys' yells and violent tugs at their traces, and at last settled into their proper altitude and course, making their way instinctively to the land of the Hesperides in the far west. Phoebus Apollo was not a good or affectionate father, but the death of his son hit him very hard. He vowed never again to drive the chariot of the sun, passing the duty on to the grateful and enthusiastic Helios, who forever after became the sun's sole charioteer. Sol, indeed, Sol was his Roman name. When you breathe in the gas named after him, helium, it makes you giggle with exactly the same mocking, high-pitched, hysterical squeak that Helios himself made when he mocked Phaeton. Phaeton's affectionate friend Cygnus went to the river Eridanos, into whose waters poor dead Phaeton had plunged. He sat there on the bank, mourning the loss of his lover with such a plaintive wail that a distraught Apollo struck him dumb, and finally, out of pity and remorse for the youth's ceaseless but now silent and inconsolable suffering, transformed him into a beautiful swan. This species, the mute swan, became holy to Apollo. In remembrance of the death of the beloved Phaeton, the bird is silent all its life until the very moment of its death, when it sings with the terrible melancholy its strange and lovely goodbye, its swan song. In honour of Cygnus, the young of all swans are called cygnets. And what of Epiphus? Did he look up and see Phaeton high above him, steering the great chariot? Or was he too busy eating dates and flirting with nymphs on board the ship sailing him and his friends to their holiday beach in North Africa? One would like to think that he did look up, and that the glare of the chariot blinded him, a suitable punishment for his cruel taunts. In fact, Epiphus went on to become a great patriarch. He married Nilus's daughter Memphis, after whom he named the city that he founded. They had a daughter, Libya, and his line, which included his great-grandson Aegyptus, went on to rule Egypt for generations. Phaeton himself was eventually placed among the stars in the consolation constellation called Auriga, the charioteer. The rather pleasing word for being placed amongst the stars, the classical equivalent of canonization, perhaps, is catasterism. A mostly lost prose work telling of the mythological origins of the constellations called the Catasterismi is credited to one Pseudo-Eratosthenes of Alexandria. The French named a very sporty, lightweight, dangerous racing carriage, the Phaeton, in his honour. It was the preferred conveyance of hot-headed young men of the late 18th and early 19th century, who, unwittingly re-enacting the myth in their youthful impetuosity, very often overturned these carriages to the fury of their long-suffering fathers. The American classicist and teacher Edith Hamilton offered this as Phaeton's epitaph. Here Phaeton lies, who in the sun god's chariot fared, and though greatly he failed, more greatly he dared.